So, imagine you're lying on an operating table, looking up at those blinding bright lights. There's this profound unspoken trust you have in the surgeon hovering over you.
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge leap of faith.
Right, like you trust the years of medical school, the residency, all the anatomy textbooks they read. But I think most importantly, if that surgeon makes a specific incision, you trust that they can tell you exactly why they chose that spot.
Yeah, and that trust is entirely built on a foundation of causal knowledge. I mean, we want our experts to have actual reasons for their actions.
Exactly.
We want this clear chain of logic that we can follow, right from the diagnosis to the treatment.
But what happens when that surgeon is an algorithm? Welcome to today's deep dive. We are opening up a stack of research today, including a theoretical framework on algorithmic ethics and this fascinating lecture transcript on AI.
Right, the forget explainability argument, it's a wild concept.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it forces us to ask a terrifying question. If an artificial intelligence is, statistically guaranteed to save your life, or drive your car better than you can, or manage your retirement fund flawlessly.
Do you actually have the right to know why it makes the choices it makes?
Yes, exactly. That is our mission today.
And it's the ultimate modern dilemma, honestly. And it's something that affects you, the listener, directly every single day.
Right, because we all interact with these algorithmic black boxes constantly, whether we realize it or not.
Exactly. They're curating your social feeds, they're filtering your job applications, flagging your credit cards. So understanding whether we should demand explanations from these systems or just blindly accept their results because they work.
Well, it's arguably the defining technological question of our era.
And the reason this black box is so terrifying is because our entire society, our laws, our sense of justice, it's all built to punish bad intentions.
Right. Like, if a human makes a mistake, we put them on the stand and we ask them what they were thinking. But how do you punish an algorithm? You can't put a line of code on trial.
You really can't. And that's where the research we're looking at today comes in. It gives us this really helpful three-layer framework to figure out exactly where this blame gets lost in translation.
Okay, let's unpack this. What's the first layer?
So the first layer they identify is the lived experience. This is basically how you and I feel an ethical value in our daily lives.
Give me an example of that.
Well, think about a concept like fairness. What does fairness actually feel like when a bank denies you a loan or when you get passed over for a promotion?
Oh, man. It's messy. It's deeply emotional.
Yeah, exactly. It's
It's
intuitive.
that visceral gut feeling, right? Like you just know when a situation is unfair, even if you can't immediately point to a specific rule that was broken.
Right, but algorithms do not have gut feelings. They can't process the vibe of a situation. So that forces us into the second layer, which they call the technical definition.
Okay, so moving from feelings to code.
Basically, yeah, this is where that messy human value has to be formalized, quantified, and encoded into a computational system.
And let me jump in here with an example from the sources of how that translation actually fails, because this is where the research really clicked for me.
Go for it.
Imagine you're trying to code that feeling of fairness into a resume screening AI for a huge tech company. You literally have to translate a human feeling into math.
Which sounds impossible.
It kind of is. So does fair mean the algorithm has to select an equal number of male and female candidates? Or does fair mean you completely blind the algorithm to gender and just let it pick the most qualified resumes,
Yeah.
even if it results in hiring like 90% men?
Wow, yeah. The moment you translate that feeling into a mathematical threshold, you're forced to make a rigid moral choice.
You're deciding which version of fairness wins.
Exactly. And the literature calls this value alignment, but in practice, it's really just a forced compromise. You're flattening a complex human emotion into a simple binary.
And that flat binary leads us straight into layer three, right?
Layer three is real-world functionality. This is what happens when we unleash that compromised mathematical definition into the wild.
And crucially, it's where the whole system eventually breaks down.
Yeah.
Because of that rigid definition in layer two, we end up with this massive accountability gap in layer three. So the resume AI discriminates against someone, or a medical AI misdiagnoses a patient.
Something goes wrong.
Right, something goes wrong. But because the algorithm is processing millions of variables in ways we can't track, no human can actually be blamed.
And this accountability gap, it forces a direct collision with how we traditionally judge ethics. For centuries, a massive part of human philosophy has relied on deontology.
Deontology. Okay, define that for us.
Deontology is essentially the due process of ethics. It means the steps you take, the rules you follow, and the why behind your actions matter just as much as the final result.
Right.
So if you do the right thing for the wrong reason, deontology says you have still failed ethically.
But AI doesn't have a due process we can understand.
Yeah.
It just spits out an answer. And the research notes point out that by relying on these black boxes, AI is forcing society to become pure consequentialists.
Which is the exact opposite of deontology.
Right. Consequentialism means you only care about the end result. It demands that we completely ignore the rules of how the machine got there as long as the outcome is good.
And that philosophical shift, that consequentialist view, that is the exact premise of the first major defense of unexplainable AI.
The pragmatist's defense.
Exactly. Because artificial intelligence naturally prioritizes outcomes over the process, a growing number of researchers are arguing that we should just stop fighting it. There's this prominent argument coming out of Carnegie Mellon, and the premise is brutally simple.
Okay.
Performance is all that matters. Forget explainability entirely.
Wait, really? Just let the black box be a black box?
Completely. The argument states that if an AI system has even a fractional, like 0.000001% better performance rate than a human expert, demanding an explanation is actively harmful.
Harmful.
Well, if the system is statistically superior, the human demand to know why is just noise. It's getting in the way of progress.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, because the researcher uses history to back this up. They point out that we live with unexplainable technology all the time.
Oh, the microwave example.
Yes, the classic example in the paper is the microwave oven. Very few people actually understand how a magnetron generates electromagnetic waves to, you know, excite water molecules and heat up their leftovers.
I definitely don't.
Right. But people don't demand a physics degree before they heat up their lunch. They just press the button.
They just want hot food. And an even stronger historical example from the research is aspirin.
Oh, this one blew my mind.
Yeah, for many decades, medical science had absolutely no idea how aspirin worked. Like, we knew it came from willow bark, we knew it reduced fever, and we knew it killed pain.
But the actual mechanism.
The underlying biological mechanism, the way it inhibits the production of prostaglandins, that was a complete mystery until much later in the 20th century.
And yet, doctors prescribed it constantly.
They prescribed it, and patients took it. There is no historical record of a patient in agonizing pain refusing to take an aspirin simply because their doctor couldn't explain the cellular mechanism behind it.
Wow.
The outcome was what mattered. The pain went away. So the pragmatic argument is this: if we didn't demand explainability from our pain medicine, why are we demanding it from our algorithms?
Right. If it works, it works.
If an AI can drive a car with fewer fatalities than a human, just let it drive. Don't ask it to explain itself.
I have to push back on that, though, because equating an artificial intelligence to a tablet of aspirin feels like a massive category error to me.
Okay. How so?
Well, aspirin is passive. It doesn't make a moral choice. A mechanical surgeon does.
Yeah.
Like a self-driving car deciding who to swerve into during an unavoidable crash is actively making a moral choice.
That's a very fair point.
So how do we reconcile this pragmatic, just take the aspirin approach, with the accountability gap we just established? When that self-driving car inevitably makes a mistake and a pedestrian gets hurt, society cannot just shrug and say, well, the overall statistics are better.
No, it really can't.
We need to know why the car turned left instead of right.
And that right there is the ultimate friction point. Your pushback about the active decision-making nature of the AI that pushes us past the practical argument and into something much deeper.
Right into the philosophy.
Exactly. Defending unexplainable AI isn't just about historical pragmatism. The second prong of this argument in our sources is entirely about epistemology.
Epistemology. Okay, for the listeners, that's the study of knowledge itself, how we actually know what we know and what it even means to understand something.
Right. And to really grasp why machines and humans are clashing so hard right now, the research takes us back to a fundamental philosophical debate from the 1700s.
We're bringing in the heavy hitters.
We are. We're looking at the clash between two titans of philosophy, David Hume, the radical empiricist, and Immanuel Kant.
Hume is fascinating here. He noticed something deeply unsettling about how human beings perceive the physical world.
The pool table analogy?
Yes. The classic example he uses is a game of pool. You're watching a billiards table, one ball rolls across the green felt, strikes a second ball, and that second ball shoots off into the corner pocket.
Right.
Our human brains immediately categorize that as a causal effect. The first ball caused the second ball to move. It transferred its energy. It's basic, undeniable physics.
Well, that's what our brains want to believe. But Hume points out a massive blind spot in that logic. He argues that you never actually see a cause.
Wait, what do you mean?
He says you cannot smell a cause, you cannot hear a cause, you cannot touch it. The concept of cause is essentially a fantasy that your brain invents to make sense of the universe.
Oh, because all your eyes actually physically witness is event A happening, followed by event B happening.
Exactly. Hume called this constant conjunction. You see ball A roll and stop, then you see ball B start moving. A, then B.
So A, then B.
Right. You see it happen over and over again, so your brain invents an invisible string connecting them, and it calls that string causality. But Hume says there is no underlying explanation required to function in the world. All you need to know is that when you see A, B corresponds to it.
Let's ground that in something you, the listener, experienced today, like a social media algorithm.
Perfect example.
The algorithm doesn't know why you're feeling sad on a Tuesday night. It doesn't know about your breakup or your stressful day at work. All it sees is constant conjunction.
Right.
It sees that when a user lingers on a melancholy video for 3 extra seconds, that's event A, they're 90% more likely to buy comfort food from an ad 5 minutes later. That's event B.
The algorithm is purely practicing Hume's constant conjunction. It has absolutely no concept of human sadness, and it doesn't need to. It just knows that A means B.
Just blind correspondence.
Exactly. That is how knowledge is produced for an empiricist like Hume. It is pure correspondence.
But Immanuel Kant steps in here and completely rejects this idea that we can just live with blind correspondence.
He does. Kant argued that this demand for cause and effect isn't just a fantasy. He says it is the fundamental operating system of the human mind.
The operating system. Wow.
Yeah. Kant says the human mind is like a desperate detective. If that detective walks into a room and sees a shattered vase on the floor, they can't simply accept that the vase broke.
Right. They have to figure out how.
Exactly. The human mind has to invent a cat that knocked it over, or a gust of wind from an open window, or a clumsy burglar. The human brain literally cannot process reality without drawing a line connecting a cause to an effect.
So for Kant, causality isn't something we observe in the world. It is the lens through which we are forced to view the world.
That's a great way to put it. Think of it like wearing glasses with thick yellow-tinted lenses. Everything you look at is going to appear yellow. You can't help it.
You're stuck with it.
Right. And for Kant, causality is the permanent tint on our human glasses. Our brains are hardwired by evolution to organize reality by demanding a why. For a human being to claim they have knowledge about something, Kant says we must have a coherent explanation of cause and effect.
And this brings us right back to the core of the AI debate. There's this great example in the research about meteorology and predicting the weather that perfectly illustrates this divide between Kant and Hume.
Oh, yeah. Break that down.
So when a human meteorologist looks at a storm, their Kantian brain says, okay, the barometric pressure dropped, which caused the temperature to fall, which caused the humidity to condense into clouds, which caused the water droplets to get heavy, which caused the rain.
We demand that causal chain.
We demand the entire story of why the rain is falling.
That is Kantian knowledge in action. It's a story of mechanisms.
But for a machine learning algorithm, predicting the weather doesn't care about temperature drops or the physics of condensation.
Not at all.
It just ingests millions of historical data points and says, every time the data looks like this, water falls from the sky. Data pattern A equals rain B. It's pure correspondence. The machine doesn't know what a cloud is.
It doesn't know what water is either. It just knows the correlation.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence systems are the ultimate Humean empiricists. They produce knowledge entirely through constant conjunction.
Wow.
They do not have the yellow-tinted glasses of human causality. They don't care about Kantian explanations. And this epistemological collision is what thinker Chris Anderson famously referred to as the end of theory.
The end of theory. Man, that is a heavy phrase. So what does a world without theory actually look like?
Anderson argues that we have reached a point where we simply must accept that machines create knowledge differently than we do.
Because they're Humean.
Right. We've established that humans think like Kant, constantly seeking causality and narrative explanations. But machines think like Hume. They find massive, complex correspondences in oceans of data that a human mind could never possibly process or visualize.
And if we accept that machine knowledge is fundamentally different, we have to let go of our demand for explainability. We have to stop forcing them to tell us a story.
Exactly. If knowledge is just correspondence, if A always leads to B, then what counts as knowledge is simply an accurate prediction.
Not an explanation.
Right. If the algorithm gets the prediction right, whether it's the weather, the stock market, or a cancer diagnosis, you have knowledge. End of story. The underlying theory of why it happens is obsolete.
So what does this all mean? We find ourselves standing at this bizarre cultural crossroads. We have built these incredibly powerful tools that operate on a totally different epistemological level than we do.
We really have.
The question for you, the listener, is this. Are we trying to drag machines up to our Kantian level, forcing them to explain themselves in our limited human language of cause and effect? Or are the machines actually dragging human knowledge back down to basic Humean correspondence?
It's an enormous societal trade-off. Because let's look back at layer 3 from our ethics framework, the real-world functionality.
Right, the accountability gap.
If we fully embrace this Humean machine knowledge because it drives cars safer and it performs surgeries with fewer errors and it optimizes our supply chains, well, we get better outcomes.
We get a massive victory for consequentialism. The world runs smoother.
But our fundamental tools for accountability completely vanish.
Because accountability requires a why. You cannot hold someone responsible if you cannot trace the cause of their actions.
Exactly. When the self-driving car turns left instead of right and crashes into a storefront, we cannot put the algorithm on the witness stand and ask it why.
It doesn't know why.
It only knows that in 99.9% of similar multidimensional data models, turning left correlated with a positive outcome. This time, it didn't.
Wow.
When society chooses to accept knowledge through correspondence, we are choosing to accept life without explanations, and that means life without accountability. When something goes wrong in a black box system, it is quite literally nobody's fault. The system just failed to correlate correctly.
That is a terrifying but entirely logical conclusion. We started this deep dive looking at the profound trust you place in a human surgeon and the friction that occurs when we replace that human with a machine.
The clash of trust.
Right. We mapped out how the human feeling of fairness gets violently compressed into rigid mathematical definitions, creating an accountability gap. We examined the pragmatist's defense, the idea that if the AI is the aspirin that cures a societal headache, we shouldn't care how it works.
And we trace that all the way down to the philosophical bedrock.
Yeah, David Hume's constant conjunction clashing with Immanuel Kant's desperate human need for a causal explanation.
And it is so crucial to remember that this isn't just an abstract topic for a university philosophy seminar. This epistemological collision is happening all around you right now.
Every single day.
The next time an algorithmic system curates the news you read, or approves your friend for a mortgage, or assists your doctor in diagnosing an MRI scan, you are watching this exact debate play out. You are watching Kantian human causality wrestle with human-machine correspondence in real time.
It really makes you reconsider every piece of technology you interact with. I want to leave you, the listener, with one final provocative thought to mull over, something that builds on this clash of how knowledge is actually made.
Lay it on us.
If Immanuel Kant is right, and our human brains are literally hardwired by evolution to demand a narrative of cause and effect.
Right, the yellow-tinted glasses.
Yeah, if that is the permanent, unchangeable yellow tint on our mental glasses, is our relentless demand for AI explainability actually a cognitive bottleneck?
Oh, wow. That's a huge question.
Right. By forcing artificial intelligence to slow down and explain its infinitely complex data correlations in simple causal terms that our limited human brains can understand, are we actually holding machines back? Are we preventing these systems from solving impossibly complex problems like reversing climate change or curing systemic diseases or unraveling quantum physics simply because the solutions exist out there in the dark, far beyond the limits of our yellow-tinted glasses?
It's a question that challenges the very limits of human understanding. And as we integrate these systems deeper into our lives, it's a question we all have to face.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the algorithms in your lives, and we'll see you next time.